This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin. You know, before we start the show and before I introduce anyone that's on the show, I want to say, holy shit, we got funded, and holy shit, our Kickstarter was amazing, and we broke almost all of our stretch goals in the last 2 days. I cannot thank you guys enough. Seriously, it's... I have no words. There are two fantastic human beings on the show with me this week. Nick White.
Hey.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me. Can we just take a second? How are you guys feeling post-Kickstarter? Because I'm feeling elated, and my brain cannot process what's coming next.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's pretty crazy. My general feeling towards people and their willingness to help out other people is pretty damn low. So when I see something like this, it
changes your worldview.
Sort of, it sort of forces me to have to consider changing my worldview. And
yeah,
in that regard, I really don't appreciate everyone's contributions. So
Jesus, Nick,
thanks a
Nick
lot.
Does not represent.
Thanks
or
a lot
speak
for forcing personal growth on my part. You know, like, no, really, we really appreciate it. We're genuinely shocked. All I'm trying to say is I'm probably more shocked than probably everyone. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I look forward
I,
to all of the illegal contraband we'll be able to buy
oh,
with
shut
all
up.
Of us.
Jeez, no.
Nick.
I'm just kidding, everyone. I'm just kidding. We have clearly and strictly outlined the usage of these funds. And
yes.
Our Kickstarter, clearly.
For this specific reason, because God
yes.
forbid Nick took the wheel
yeah.
and just went crazy with the mm-hmm. checkbook that we have. That I still mm-hmm. have an archaic checkbook. Kate, how are you feeling? How are things? You know, all that.
I'm good. I'm excited because this means new tech for us, which means we can do new and exciting things.
Yeah. I'm mostly excited to do an in-person hangout with people and actually be able to record something and have it not sound like garbage like we've tried to do in the past. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know that most people realize that, like, if you huddle around a single mic, like, we each have our individual ones, but if you use one mic for multiple people, it will sound like actual garbage to your ears.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now we have the thing that make, oh, we'll have the thing that makes it so you don't have to do that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And we're going to Emerald City Comic Con. At least some of us are. We're still figuring out the details there. And then we're going to be able to do stuff there. It's my brain. I just can't. And we're going to have people like recording actual a minisode with us. We're going to have people crafting episodes. We're going to have people doing hangouts. Like, I'm so excited to get all this planned. Like, my Excel spreadsheet is, like, on fire with excitement. And because I'm just typing away and constantly modifying things to make it all scheduled out. Like, the Excel nerd in me is going crazy. Anyways.
Those words have never been spoken before.
Yeah.
Just on the back of the pull quote on the back of Excel, which is a joke because no one buys Excel. It's just Mike. It's just like a 90s photo of Mike Rappin, like, in front of the computer, and his hands are on fire and his hair is, like, stuck up, you know, like electricity shit. And he's like,
yeah.
I can't withstand this power of Excel 2018.
Yeah, Nick, you definitely just spoiled my plans for next year. Thanks,
yeah,
Nick.
I'm sure Bill Gates is going to void that contract with you any day now. Yeah. Non-disclosure agreement.
Anyways, let's get into this. Let me ask the question that I ask every single week. How have you been? How have comic books been? Let's start with you, Kate.
I'm good. I actually, in a relevant turn of events, spent some time this week fighting with Excel, doing break-evens, which is
Woo!
Real exciting stuff. No, I would rather burn Excel to the ground, so I don't know where you're coming from, but we can still be friends. otherwise, I've read a whole bunch of comics, actually, recently, in trades, because I had one of those events where you order things from the library and then... You order them one at a time over a series of months, and then they all come in at once, like they always do.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was able to read The Ancient Magus Bride, Volume 2, which is a manga, and that's by Kori Yamazaki and Adrian Beck. Adrian Beck's the translator, so it's the... Mm-hmm. Kori does everything else. But I feel like for manga, the translator is incredibly important, so I want to give a shout out there, because...
Definitely.
There's some really rough translations out there that
mm-hmm.
they can be fun in the campy way, but for a book like this, it's much more serious, and it's like a fantasy book, but it's a serious tone mostly, and so having really well-translated dialogue is important, because there's, especially with different creatures speaking in very specific kind of cadences and styles. So the art is still fabulous in this volume. The story faltered a bit, you know, that sophomore slump. And it kept going back to the piece of the story that bothers me, that I have to forget about in order to enjoy the book, which is that he purchased her as a bride, like the two main characters, oh. One purchased the other as like a child bride, which is mm-hmm. awful. And you have to just, and it's like barely a point in the first one. It's just like, and that's how they came together. And it's like weird and fantasy world, but still creepy. And so with this one, they like mentioned it a couple more times. And I'm just like, I don't know if I want to keep going with this. Like, it's definitely a library book, not a purchase book. And I wish it didn't have that, because everything else is great. Like, the art is incredible. Like, I don't usually like manga art, but the art in this one's fantastic. And otherwise, it's very, like, kind of Harry Potter-ish with someone, the main character, finding out that she has powers and then learning about this whole new magical world with all its creatures and all these different, you know, people trying to... Which is, you know, right up my alley. I also read Angela Asgard's Assassin, Volume 1, Priceless. That's a lot of titles, but that's mm-hmm. the one by Kieran Gillen and Marguerite Bennett, I think, also wrote part of it. With art mm-hmm. by a whole bunch of people, like
Phil Jimenez.
There we go. Thanks, Mike. LeBew Underwood did inks. Scott Hanna was also doing inks, and Tom Palmer. And then Stephanie Hans does some art on it, she's amazing. And mm-hmm. Romolo Fajardo is doing colors, and Clayton Cowles on letters. And
Clayton Coles.
What? What?
We're getting hard with the names. We're getting hard
that
with
is,
the name.
That is probably the one
show.
Name we're
okay,
really.
Okay. Well,
hard with.
I just got fired, so it was nice talking to you guys.
Thanks for being on the show, Kate.
Never talk to you again. Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah. So letters were super important in this book, because you have obviously the Asgardians speak with their fancy font, and then there's monsters screeching and all that stuff, and some people, when they do it, it gets like looking ridiculous or hard to read. And we've all been trying to make a point of, because it's lettering, it's like you don't notice it unless it's bad usually. So I want to shout mm-hmm. out, because this is so good, you don't even think about it. You just hear Thor's voice and you hear Angela's voice. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, which is very much via the stylized fonts. The art is incredible. The book is like, why hasn't everyone read this? You know what I mean? Kieran Gillen, am I right?
Yeah. I haven't read this, but
what?
Yeah.
Okay, that's on your list. That's on your list. It is Angela, because she was stolen, right, by the angels as a baby from Asgard. And so now this is after the whole Guardians of the Galaxy arc where she shows up. And so now in retribution, she goes and steals the new baby of Freya and Odin. So her little sister, and she takes it to heaven. And like, so she's being pursued by all like Thor and all the Asgardians and everything. And then there's, you know, plot twists and this and that about who's really who and what the true motives are and what she's really doing. And is she a good person or a bad person or maybe somewhere in between? And she's like best friends with Gamora, and I'm just so jealous. And she's amazing. And he manages to get her a new costume in there that has more things covered, which is fantastic because for those of you who don't know, there's a metal bikini happening in a lot of Angela books, which is not ideal. So I really enjoyed it. I'm definitely reading the next volume if I can figure out what is the next volume. So it's one of those Thorverse books that's a little confusing for what comes mm-hmm. after what.
So. Anything else?
No, I mean, I read some Star Wars books to prep for this, but we'll talk about those later, I think.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you were going to go into it or not.
Save my rant.
Okay. Okay. Nick, what did you read this week? How have you been as well?
Things have been busy. Yesterday... went to Grand Rapids and
partied with the coolest person ever.
Yeah, we went over to Brian's house.
It was your birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Kate. Happy birthday.
Thanks. Yeah.
watched some stuff and hang out, and Jordan and I went to FYE because it was like, it's like 2006 all over again, and we actually want to buy CDs, so
yeah.
Got the Stranger Things soundtrack part one. For those unaware, I made a very dumb mistake several months back and didn't do my research and realized the Stranger Things soundtrack was split into two parts, and I was like, oh, Stranger Things, bought it, got home, oh, it's part two. Not that if I put on the soundtrack and you listen to it, you'd be like, oh, clearly this is the second half of the show. I would have been none the wiser. I mean, I love synthesizer music. It doesn't always work that well when you like, you know, like bring your friends over, let's party. And it's like, you know, the Stranger Things soundtrack. Not that I invite people over and party anyway. And, yeah, so I would say, the Stranger Things soundtrack is probably great stuff for studying to or doing homework to, but it's not the sort of thing that you know, want to hold a rager to, I guess you could say. So that was my big thing.
And Nick does depends hold a lot of rages. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It does come with a Demogorgon temporary tattoo, though. So I think nice. I pretty much am the winner of this weekend.
My favorite thing getting dragged to FYE yesterday is it's basically Hot Topic. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can spend $50 on a weird pillow that's maybe an emoji and maybe just some weird character, and you, like, all that stuff that I associate with Hot Topic, like overpriced weird Harley Quinn stuff and everything, it's there now. That's what I look at when these guys are hunting for CDs.
Yeah, yeah. Regrettably, I was trying to find the Naked and the Famous CD, but they didn't have the new album, so newer-ish album. So, you know, anyone who has access to that, just send it my way. Thank you, please. Nick,
anyways,
you can probably
Nick,
download this on the internet. Yeah, I know.
What did you read?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, this is about comics. Oh, weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, as much as I would like to hear this, because I still can't believe people buy CDs. I mean,
I know,
I'm living a hip, cool life in
New
York.
But you know me.
You
know me with my tinfoil hat. Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, you know, when the post-apocalyptic era inevitably happens and DRM is still a thing, people are going to be like, geez, I wish the internet was still a thing so I could listen to my music.
I get you. I get you.
Yep. Anyway, enough of that. So I did read a few things, probably not as much as normal, as I was kind of put on this show last minute, but I did have a couple
things. Things happen.
Things happen. That's okay. I'm just glad I read a few things. I read Briggsland Lone Wolves issue 4. This is one of the issues in this miniseries that is a standalone that really tends to do a side story with a guest artist. This month, thankfully, it's Vanessa Del Rey. Hit fame, as well as Constantine the Hellblazer fame, as well as yes, that was the other one, exactly. So we have a side story about Abby Briggs, who is the middle brother's wife, and it's an interesting perspective and an interesting person to focus on, because here we have someone who married into the family, and inevitably you have that question of what sort of person marries into a militia compound sort of mentality group, like who's like, you know, sign me up for a date with that guy from Waco, right? And David Koresh, he sounds like a nice man. What's that, Mike?
I said maybe you just don't know. Maybe you go on a couple dates, you're like, well, I never get invited to his house, but he seems really nice. Yeah. And then it turns out
we're always at my place. What's the deal? yeah, exactly. But it sort of discusses that, and it's interesting because it's a great question, and the focus of the issue is a younger, like a 16-year-old girl in the community comes to her because she's pregnant. She's not really certain if she wants to have the kid. She knows that according to the sort of religious rules of this base, like, you know, children, gift from God, it would sure be a waste if you did anything with them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, whatever you believe about that, that's fine, but that's what they think, and she's not so certain she feels that way. And so she comes to Abby for help and maybe getting off of the compound and resolving that situation however she chooses to do. So it was a pretty serious issue, but it was also a very interesting issue because you have her sort of going back into quote-unquote normal life and interacting with some of her old friends from college who find out that she actually ended up marrying, you know, into the infamous Briggs family, and conversations and conflicts happen. Really, really interesting issue. I really love these standalone, character-centric side stories, and Brian Wood loves formatting his runs like this. I know it's not something everyone else does, but he really does this with so many of his works. You see it a lot in Massive as well. You see it in Rebels as well. So I really, really, really enjoyed that. I also read Batman 30. This is the second Kite Man centric issue. You kind of have Kite Man bouncing around helping out all of these other villains. And as they inevitably get captured and captured and captured, he ends up being like the one who keeps being left. And that's not a coincidence. That's not an accident. It's all on purpose. But why? We also find out that I think it was the Riddler claims he killed Kite Man's son. Is that true?
Yeah, I believe there was a whole that the first issue that focused on Kite Man was about the tragedy of Kite Man.
And I didn't know if it was like a bluff or something, because I didn't remember anything relating to that. And I was like, holy fuck, this is really dark.
Now I feel like I need to reread that, but I'm pretty sure that's too. What happened.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Batman, I guess.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like, what is that book on right now? Sorry, like 35 like, or something? This is 30.
I don't know.
Come
on, people. I'm in the early 20s still, so like, I hate you forever.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, like, Kate, maybe you shouldn't listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
cover your ears, Kate.
It's okay. I'm resigned to spoilers for Batman. That's one of those books that you can't really avoid spoilers if you get too behind on. Twitter will spoil it. It's just, yeah, it is what it is. I fell off, like, I haven't read where Swamp Thing shows up. That's the next issue for me.
Need to read that issue. Yeah, that's a standalone. It's a... Mark my words, it will win a couple awards this year, for sure.
We'll see.
I think so, yeah. One other thing, I do have some Star Wars stuff, we'll deal with that later, but I read Exo number 7. This, of course, is the second iteration of Exo Man of War, written by Matt Kint. This is the first issue drawn by Clayton Crane, who, of course, worked with Matt Kint pretty extensively on the books Rye and also the 4001 event. Crane is such a good fit for this pulp sci-fi series that you almost struggle in a way to try to remember who was on this book before him. It almost feels like he's been there the whole damn time. It's like, who was here? Oh, that's right, Thomas Giorello. Okay. It's an interesting issue. We learned that there is an extraplanetary group of individuals that's working with the dominant political party to sort of kill the rest, and it's too difficult to try to get into the political shit of this book, because honestly, in a lot of ways, this book is slowly gravitating more and more towards Game of Thrones, both in terms of the political complexity as well as the unadulterated violence that accompanies it. It's really pretty much right there.
Well, I have a really pressing question about this book.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Maybe you can answer. What do the X and the O stand for?
Great question.
Extra awesome.
Yeah.
Right?
I'll see myself out.
I think it possibly has something to do with XO being a military abbreviation. I think for executive officer, I'm sure someone in the military or something is going to be like, you fucking idiot. It's completely wrong.
Yep, that's it. Unsubscribe.
I think it has something to do with that. I know that obviously this character has been named like this since the 90s. And so I really don't know maybe what was fueling the name back then as well. But... I think it has something to do with that. Otherwise, I have no idea, because obviously, you know, the suit's alien, so they wouldn't name it that. And he's a Visigoth, so they have no reason to be calling anything Man of War back then. So,
right.
I'll Wikipedia a few things later today, Kay. I'll let you know what I find.
This pressing question, yes.
What about you, Mike? What have you read? What have you been doing other than freaking out over Kickstarter?
I've actually found some time to read comics. After the Kickstarter finished up on Friday night, when I had a handful of whiskey drinks and watched Edge of 17.
Why
don't do
though?
That. Don't ever do that.
Because
Exactly. It doesn't matter.
Is that the Woody Harrelson one where he's a teacher?
Woody Harrelson's a teacher. I don't remember who was in this movie, quite honestly. I had a lot of alcohol by the time I started it. Yes. Anyways, watch that. And I did read some comics over the week. I did read Runaways number 3. This is by Rainbow Rowell, Chris Anka, with colors by Matt Wilson and letters by Joe Caramagna. And oh my gosh, I don't really want to say anything else about this book because really, we've talked about it a lot on the show, but my heart feels really good and really bad every time I pick up this series. We're 3 issues in. If you read the original Runaways run, prepare to have your heart broken. This issue is fantastic, and it's exciting, but it's also sad. And I really love the way that Rainbow Rowell has tackled a lot of the issues in this series so far. The obvious big story spoiler that you get from the first pages of issue 1 are that Gert is back to life. She is found in the past by Chase. He brings her back and she's healed. And now Gert is trying to understand how to deal with being alive at like a 15, 16 year old when all her friends are in their 20s. And just yesterday for her, they were all kids on the run. And now
I wish
not.
I had that problem.
Oh man, it's such a good book. And Chris Anka's art gets better every issue. And I don't think that it's him improving. It's that he has such a hone on the characters that it feels right. The whole book feels right. And I made a big shout out about this on Twitter. It's so fucking good.
This is one with the dinosaur, right?
Yes, this is the one with the dinosaur. And with the 280 character limit, I can now credit everyone in my tweet. And I'm actually happy about that.
Have you read Runaways, Nick?
I haven't. I know that it's like kids and their parents are supervillains and that's it.
Yeah, no, you would like it, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's Brian K. Vaughan, his work at Marvel. He did a really good job with this book.
Who drew the original run?
I do not remember off the top of my head.
I don't think it was Staples.
No.
Okay.
It was before all that. But you should find it. It usually goes on super duper sale on Amazon if you're interested in buying it there. Otherwise, you can always find the trades at libraries. I know it's becoming very popular with the TV show coming up. Otherwise, I read Royal City number 7. This is Jeff Lemire on writing and art with lettering by Steve Wands. This is in the middle of a story arc, so I won't say much about it. It's very 90s, and I like that Jeff Lemire is keeping the 90s aesthetic in terms of music and just backgrounds and things like that, and just subtle mentions. And his letters in the back of the book always have a playlist, and he's got a Spotify playlist out there. So if you need to have that throwback moment of grunge and 90s music, it's all out there. I'll post a link to it in the show notes, but it's really great.
I've got the trade of that still sitting around. Is that book? I mean, don't spoil this if it turns out to be spoilery, your answer, sure. But is it... Does the book remain very grounded, real-life drama, or does it shift at all?
It remains real-life drama.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's the most I'll say about it. Yeah.
Sure, that's fair.
Let's see. Otherwise, I did read The Dying and the Dead, numbers 1-6.
Can't wait for trade 2. Can't wait.
So I picked this up. I picked up the issues that I was missing a while ago during an Image sale. Remembering that in 2015, when this book started, I was super hyped about it. And I read the first 2 issues at least 5 times, waiting for the 3rd issue to come out. And then when it finally did, it was after a massive delay. And then 4, 5, and 6 came out in quick succession. And I believe they're now back on a monthly schedule. But this book started 2 years ago, and they're only 6 issues in because of some delay. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to point at anybody about who did this. But Jonathan Hickman on writing, Ryan Bodenheim on art, with Michael Garland on colors and Russ Wooten on letters. This book became a really interesting war story about revenge and legacy and war and death and the gruesomeness of men with power. And I think that's constantly a theme. Yeah, this is a theme that I think Jonathan Hickman really loves to write about. A lot of his books are about this. East of West is a lot about this, as well as there's other parts of things in East of West, so I don't think it hammers on so hard as much as Dying and the Dead does. But Secret was kind of like this, which is another book that I believe had the same team with Jonathan Hickman on writing and Ryan Bodenheim on art and so on. And I really, really like the way that the direction this book took. I thought that it was going to stay in this old men need to get the job done thing. And instead, they go into the past to discuss why the loyalty between the main characters exists, and it kicks ass. It's so good.
If you haven't read this book, it's probably my favorite Hickman book. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. It's not as complex as many other Hickman books have been. So I think if you're looking for a Jonathan Hickman book to jump onto, pick up the 6 issues of this book that are out. Get ready for the 7th one that comes out at the end of November. It's very, very good.
Here's your poll quote, John Hickman. If you're a fucking dummy like me, you'll like this book. honestly, the color palette in this book is amazing. Like, the way this book uses color is... Ugh.
Jesus, yeah. Well, Michael Garland, I believe he also did Secret with the same team, and he kicked so much ass in that book. I told myself that if I saw him and Ryan Bodenheim doing another book, I'd buy it. And that's where Dying and the Dead came from. Like, to Nick's point, the colors make this book. Ryan Bodenheim's art is fantastic and incredibly intricate, but without Michael Garland's color palette to emphasize points in the story, it wouldn't be the same book. It would just be a plain Jane story, but the colors really hammer on the points being made in the story. I don't know how you write for that. this team works together very, very well in that regard. I guess finally, the last thing I read was Journey into Mystery Volume 1, Fear Itself. I've been sitting on this book for a while. I picked it up on a super duper sale on Amazon, I think. And so I grabbed like all of the Journey into Mystery volumes, and I read volume 1 and half of volume 2. This is Kieran Gillen. In volume 1, it's Kieran Gillen, Doug Braithwaite, with Ulysses Areola and Andy Troy on colors and Clayton Coles on lettering. This is a really fun caper. This is a book all about just a plan coming together with Kid Loki, and I understand why Tia loves this book so much, and I haven't even gotten through all of it. Like, I picked up how fun this book was in issue 2 of the volume. So, as fallout for Fear Itself, say what you will about Fear Itself, this book was actually very good. So if you get a chance to read that big old Journey into Mystery omnibus that's out there for like $100, I can tell you it's very well worth it. And I'm going to keep reading into this series. I've like abandoned all of my weekly books just to read Journey into Mystery at this point. So
yeah, this definitely feels like a rabbit hole to fall down into and just like be in love with. You know what I mean? Like a binge-worthy comic series.
I think it absolutely is. So I'm going to keep reading. I'll report back next week. But anyways, for books that are coming out this week, November 15, 2017 is when comic books are released. What are you guys reading this week? Let's start with you, Nick.
For me, it's definitely Bloodshot Salvation, number 3. As usual, Batman does not need my help to sell copies. So so this is... how'd you hear about Batman? Oh, it was Nick White. Nick White clued me in.
Yeah, I read comic books podcast.
Before that,
Batman is very underground, you know?
Yeah, you've probably never heard of him. it's played by a guy named Ben Affleck, up-and-coming actor. Bloodshot Salvation is the most recent iteration of this series, written by Jeff Lemire and drawn in equal parts by Miko Suwayan and Louis LaRosa. LaRosa writing the current timeline arc and Suwayan writing the future timeline arc. Of course, this is the one featuring Ray, as he's otherwise known, Bloodshot. In the present day, dealing with the fact that his girlfriend's family is grade A crazy and evil, and in the future, dealing with the fact that he's seemingly dead, and his daughter, Jessie, who is 9, is on the run with his wife, and also Bloodshot's supposed to be dead then. And I've read the preview of 3. It looks really, really good. We find out more about this supposed idea that Bloodshot's actually dead. And we find out, minor spoilers, because I've read the preview, guys, but this is crazy as hell. They get Punk Mambo, who's like this supernatural Channel the Dead character, which is cool. She's kind of this character that bounces between books. I think she's only had a one-shot. She's never actually had her own series. So they channel Ray in a nice little, seance of sorts. And they find out he's not dead. He's trapped in 4002. What the ever-loving fuck.
What?
yeah.
Cool.
Believe it. Cool. Cool, because that means we get to go back to the 4001 universe, which that's awesome. I'm totally on board with revisiting that. My only question is, after, you know, 30 or 40 minutes in that universe, what's going to be left alive if Bloodshot's there? So, so that's grade A fucking crazy as hell. And then in the present day, we're going to get to see more about Rey going to deal with Magic's father and his crazy little cult down in the south, where he's known to everyone as Daddy, and he believes that he is the God's prophet. He believes he's God's prophet, and Bloodshot's like, the guy's like, oh, are you gonna threaten me? And Bloodshot's like, I'm not gonna threaten you, I'm actually here to just flat out kill you. And the guy's like, fun. You can't kill me, I'm 300 years old. And I'm like, what? He's like, that's what happens when you're God's emissary, and you know, according to his religious beliefs, that must mean that you know, Bloodshot, he says, I've been waiting for you, because he believes that Bloodshot is the Antichrist who has finally come to Earth.
Oh boy.
So this sounds like a lot of fun. I'm really, really, I cannot wait to read this issue, because Bloodshot's probably going to kill everyone. Unless this guy has weird powers. So I'm really, really interested. It sounds like it's going to be zany as hell. I mean, why do I keep reading books about, like, fringe military compound groups? This is,
I think,
like,
you just really connect with these. You're like, oh, tell me more about your bunker. Yeah. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, tell me more about your you know, your go bag. And you know, I've been watching some of those shows where people turn off all the lights in their house and they do the drills where they count all the steps to the front door so they can do it when the apocalypse happens and the power runs out. And
Nick, are you prepping something? Like, are you worried about the end of times?
It's called doomsday prepping, Michael. It's called doomsday prepping. And okay. It's 42 steps okay. to the front door. I think this is something you ought to work on yourself, because some of us are prepared. Some of us have already filled the bathtub with water for when it inevitably happens. And some of us are watching the road just nonstop, just over and over again. Viggo Mortensen, you know, guiding that kid through post-apocalyptic America, which, side note, haven't seen that movie. You should.
I don't even know what movie we're talking about.
The Road. So, The Road, starring Viggo Mortensen.
Okay.
You could also read the book.
Kate.
Just shout out plug for books. Yeah. That's
yeah, is Viggo Mortensen
book.
In the book? No.
No. Okay. Okay. We're going to move on to a different rant.
Yeah, please move on. Kate, what are you excited for this upcoming week? And please, God, tell me it's not something about the end of the world.
It's not. It's about moving into a new movie. So Star Wars, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Star Wars naming stuff now that Disney's taken over, like, it's subtitle among subtitle,
for those
which
you aren't afraid with the second most prolific brand that exists.
Well, I mean, the comic books are something that's still out there for a lot of people, so you know what, yeah. It's okay.
So I mean, as much as I joke about the titling, it works really well because it's also consistent with all the novels, which I've been reading some of. And so it's Star Wars, which is your initial brand. And then there's Journey to the Force Awakens or Journey to Star Wars or whatever. And so this one is Journey to Star Wars, The Last Jedi, which is another subtitle, right? And then it's Captain Phasma. Hooray! Which is a mouthful because Star Wars, Disney Marvel stuff is being named with subtitle on subtitle these days. But it's actually pretty handy if you're, like, following along between novels and comics and all that.
Right, right.
So I think this is a miniseries.
I can't imagine how many people are actually doing that, but, you know.
What? Okay. I know a couple.
Yeah, I think that's right.
yeah, okay.
I think it's a miniseries, but asterisk on that because I'm not sure. But it doesn't say, like, volume one or anything. So I'm assuming.
Okay.
But it's it's set between episode 7 and episode 8, and it's about how Phasma escaped the destruction of Starkiller Base, which should be fun. The big selling point for me, besides just needing more Star Wars content because I'm so excited for the movie, is Marco Cecchetto is on art for this. Mm-hmm. He was the one who did all my beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Gamora art back when we had that in our lives, before it was killed off mercilessly by Marvel. And Kelly Thompson's doing the writing. And I generally like her stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So it should be fun. It should be Star Wars-y and beautiful and a good time. And it's like $17 because now we're publishing everything first in paperback, which is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm genuinely curious as to what happened to Captain Phasma. Maybe I'll grab this or something.
See, I did not understand the obsession with her. Like, that was one of those characters like Barb in Stranger Things, where the internet went nuts for Captain Phasma, and then the brand right. was
People
just
like shiny shit. It's really like, that simple,
right? We're all it's a bunch really of magpies. That
No, I think it was just that there was this elite stormtrooper. And it was Brienne of Tarth from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a lot of hype built around it. And unfortunately, the character didn't get a lot of screen time.
No, like,
but
a
I
few
think
minutes.
That's going to change in the next movie. Like, she's going to be an important character in the series, not necessarily in a particular movie.
Yeah, I think you're
I mean,
right.
We said this about Boba Fett with Empire Strikes Back, and then he proceeded to fall into a living pit in the sand. So,
yeah. You never know.
We've been disappointed before.
Yeah.
Well, whatever it is, there's all the merch
just
you
be,
want out there
yeah,
for
Yeah, just
it.
Be worried.
Because they're exactly. like, people like it? Okay, just churn it out. So.
Right, right. Well, yeah, for me this week, I'm really excited for a new book called Fence. Issue number one is coming out. This is by C.S. Paquette with artist by Joanna the Mad,
this
I guess.
This is Boom, right?
This is from Boombox. The story is about a 16-year-old character named Nicholas Cox, who's an outsider in the competitive fencing world. And right away, you've hooked me in because this sounds super manga, super anime.
I'm assuming like, it is manga, right?
If you're in the fencing world, like, no one's an outsider in the fencing world. Like, if yeah. fencing is your sport, like, there's no bad boy fencer. Like, that's right up there with lacrosse in terms of, like,
yeah, I get that. I just think it's like the premise is funny and the
oh, sure.
like the synopsis has like it's like for fans of Yuri on Ice and Check Please, and I'm like, I love both of those things. And the art, just the art alone, I can already see like I'm gonna be totally into this book. So I'm really excited to have another cool, like all ages book that's kind of on my pull that isn't super serious and is gonna be it's going to be over the top serious, but in a way that I'm going to love all of the characters. The same way that Yuri on Ice
is
was like over
manga?
The top serious.
Yeah, is this
I
manga?
I don't know. It looks like the art is manga inspired. I haven't seen any preview issues or preview pages or anything like that. So we'll see. Nonetheless, I'm really excited for this book. So
Mike just needs more Boom books about fringe sports. I mean, first it was roller derby, and now it's fencing. And
you're right.
In 3 months, Mike's going to be reading a highlight book. I guarantee it. That's just it's just a trajectory of things.
Dude, you know what? One of the most like hard to find manga out there is a book about the board game Go. Like that's a whole thing. That's a whole like. Renee told me about this, and I'm very excited. Like that's the kind of stuff I want to read about when it comes to super ridiculously competitive all ages esque books is fringe sports and gaming. So why not? Like I'm never gonna get into Yu-Gi-Oh.
I just can't wait for when we find out Renee's fucking with us about these where he's like, yeah, right. I've been reading a new manga. This one's about competitive jet ski acrobatics. Okay. All right, Renee.
I buy it. Yeah.
Like he's he talks about that Robot X Laser Beam book. It blows my mind. It's a golf book. Anyways, I'm really excited for Fence, and I think everyone else should. There's a Kevin Wada variant cover that's going to be out there that just looks beautiful. So, and that's how I heard about this, and that's why I'm very excited. So, whew, Fence. For our show this week, we are going to be talking about Star Wars comics. Just as a blanket, hey, what's up with Star Wars comic books? I mean, there's this movie coming out later this year, so maybe it's time relevant. I don't know. But as far as Star Wars comics are concerned right now, you know, Marvel basically pulled back the license to Dark Horse that they had given them for so many years to say, hey, we're going to start publishing our own books under this big Disney Marvel conglomerate thing so that all the movies and all the comic books could be in this concise universe. Got rid of some of the old stuff, moved it into what they call Star Wars Legends or Extended or Old Universe or whatever, and all the new stuff that's being published is considered strictly canon, and it happens and it exists as part of the greater movie television universe. So I guess if you were someone getting into Star Wars comic books right now, Kate, Nick, what would you guys recommend?
I mean, personally, if what you love are the, you know, 4, 5, and 6, and I think the easiest toe in is to start with Star Wars Volume 1 of the new ones that Disney and Marvel, you know, Disney Marvel's put out. It's by Jason Aaron, and it is a good series. I mean, it's actually one of the better ones, and it's I think the most approachable because it's all the characters you recognize and they're going on adventures just like you remember kind of thing.
Right.
And And then once you like are like, oh, cool, Star Wars comics are a thing, like try Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader comic series because it's amazing. And it's done, which sometimes is more approachable when you're like, okay, there's four volumes of this. I can, you know, I can do that versus like a really long ongoing thing. I think that would be my answer was someone said, what should I try?
So I own all of those books, but I haven't read all of the Star Wars books. This new iteration with I think it was Jason Aaron and the guy who did Authority or no
the first, Planetary. The first artist was John Cassaday.
The Star Wars books have had different artists for different arcs.
Right. Do they? I know that in the old Howard Chaykin books, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, they kind of leaned into the Luke Leia romance thing. I'm guessing they do that less in the new series.
I mean, I think they're in a tough position because, you know, Jason Aaron and Kieran Gillen are Monday morning quarterbacking it because, of course, we know what happens in 4, 5, and 6.
What is that? What is that phrase even?
Oh God, I realize I can't use sports analogies with you people.
Not even that. What are you? Okay. What is a Monday morning quarterbacking?
So here's the deal. Okay, most NFL football games are played on Sunday. So Monday morning quarterbacking it is when you say basically it's woulda, coulda, shoulda-ing it, you know, the day after the game. You know, it's basically saying, you know, I would have done this or I could have done this. So it's called Monday morning quarterbacking.
Okay. I've never heard that phrase before. I'm familiar with football. I know how it works.
I'll send you some JPEGs of football at some point.
I've heard of quarterbacks.
Yeah, and because the quarterback is the leader of the team, it's the idea, you know, I would have done this or I would have made this decision. So now
I see.
Now I know. Anyway, so I think they're it's a fun, interesting position because obviously if they wanted to, they could go ahead and be like, we need to keep this as platonic as fuck because we know how this plays out. But of course, Luke and Leia don't know that at the time. And so obviously I know it would appear that they've tried to not make things real weird, but
yeah,
of course
I'll say they're not like, as cringy as past iterations.
It's towing the line well enough. I mean, obviously they've tried to amp up the Han and Leia thing because of how we know how that plays out. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more of an emphasizing of that, in order to downplay the Luke Leia cringe fest.
Okay. I mean, that's the only question I have about Star Wars. Thank you for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast.
No, yeah, that's it.
I guess so there's the original. There's like the main Star Wars storyline that happens, and that takes place between Episode 4 and Episode 5,
correct,
right?
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Follows the destruction of the Death Star. Yes.
Okay. So where does the Darth Vader storyline, Kate, that you recommended, where does that take place in all of this?
Same time. It's right after A New Hope.
Okay. Okay. So we've got this story of following our, you know, main trio and R2-D2 and C-3PO, I'm guessing, as well as this story that's by Kieran Gillen and Salvador La Roca, I believe, that follows Darth Vader post Episode 4 going, I fucked up. Yeah, he's trying to figure things out.
He's in the shit. Guessing. Like, he is in a bad, like, he is, his job performance review is not looking real good at this point.
Yeah.
He has a lot of people to answer to. And all joking aside, seriously, a lot of that book's beginnings is about Darth Vader. He's basically demoted. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's like up and comers trying to take his place.
He gets a babysitter, this old, like, basically he looks like a British, like, aristocrat dude with, I think, like a monocle of sorts who basically has to follow him around and supervise him.
Okay.
Oh my God.
It's very weird, but it's really good. I like that they go, because he's going to try, he's like trying to figure stuff out. He's going to all these different planets. So it's like the fun parts of Star Wars where you get to see new cool planets and cool creatures, and Darth Vader's out there like being smart and
killing
savage. Yeah. Yeah. And then now the new Darth Vader series, I actually read the first volume of this week, is by Charles Soule. And it is set between episodes 3 and 4.
Whoa.
So it's when right after Anakin, like right after Padme has died, and Anakin finds out mm-hmm. and is like taken under the wing of the Emperor to become his like apprentice or whatever. So this first arc is all about how Darth Vader got his red lightsaber. And it turns out you have to, there, none of them are red. What you have to do is steal one from a living Jedi and corrupt the
spoilers.
Saber.
Whoa, spoilers. Whoa, spoilers. Okay. No,
what?
I'm kidding.
They're
I'm
not
kidding.
Spoilers at all. It's like the back of the book.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know. It's an origin story for an object. And I'm just like, this could be a whole genre of things. What other objects in the world do we need origin stories for?
Han's blaster pistol.
Right? Like, where was this manufactured?
Well, actually, in that regard, I mean, was the Lando book, Nick, I believe you read that, was the Lando book all about the Millennium Falcon, or was there more to Lando's story?
I don't think it was Millennium Falcon centric. I know in the past that's always been, I don't know if Han getting it from Lando is canon anymore.
Really?
I'm not certain of that. Jesus, maybe I'm remembering this book wrong. I mean,
you are. He's trying to steal the Emperor's ship.
Right.
And it's like a ship. He doesn't know it's the Emperor's ship, and then they steal it, and they're like, That's why it goes to shit. Yeah.
Okay.
And
it's a whole bunch of
Sith stuff on it, like Sith museum, basically.
Sith artifacts.
In it. Yeah. It's pretty good. The art is good. It's just a mini, so it's just 5 issues. And so my only complaint was that they didn't really go deep on anything. Like, the stuff about the Sith artifacts was interesting, but it was like 2 pages long. It was that kind of downside of having a mini. I do like that they're doing self-contained minis for a lot of these characters. Like, unlike a lot of people, I really like the Chewbacca mini. And then others were just like, they just didn't need to be full things. Like the Princess Leia one, that did not need to be a full series. And so they didn't make it one.
Yeah. The Princess Leia one was kind of disappointing
because
my mind, she's way more badass. I mean, like, and she's pretty cool and awesome in that book. And I really liked the like attitude and the mentality that she had. But I wish that they would have given her a better story to go with. Because frankly, it was, I did read that and I was very disappointed. Even with like, you know, Terry Dodson on art, I thought he did a pretty solid job. There was just some weirdness in that book that I was like, oh, this was not as interesting as I was hoping it would be, that they could wrap it up, because I've heard so many good things about all the other Star Wars books.
Yeah. She has some good books. Like, I just read Bloodline, which is all about her right before Force Awakens, when she's like in the
comment
Senate
that
and everything.
This is actual book.
Yeah, that's you read words on a page. It's this new thing. No, actually, I didn't even do that. I listened to the audiobook, because Star Wars books have awesome enhanced audio with like blaster noises and all that stuff. It was pretty cool. They give her, like, some writers do a good job with her. I didn't think the mini for the comics fell into that camp.
Yeah,
I think the beef with the Chewbacca one that people had is basically that all of the characters except Chewbacca aren't like characters you know. So it's Phil Noto on art, so it's incredibly beautiful. Did you read this one?
Yeah, no, I didn't, and that's. I mean, I was of the opinion, like, did this need to be a book in the first place?
But it's so fun.
See, and that's what I've also heard for people that like are like, oh, don't hate on this Chewbacca book, and I'm like, yeah, but how many issues is it?
It's 5. It's just a mini. He goes to, when he's like on a planet doing a separate run from everyone else, he finds like this slave girl and helps her escape and all that stuff. It's just like a little mini adventure of him helping this girl, and the girl's badass and he's like a strong Wookiee, so it's helping her escape from her captors on this planet kind of thing.
Okay. I mean, I feel like that book is going to eventually fall into my hands, and I will eventually read it, because
get it for like $2.
I have this hoarder mentality of like, well, let's just get all the Star Wars books while we can. And this is how I got super deep into the Ultimate Marvel Universe, which was very bad for my wallet. I owned every single volume of every single Ultimate book up to Ultimatum.
God. There's so many.
At one point. Yeah, Kate. I was a broke college student and decided that I needed the comics more than food.
More than food,
So, okay, all right.
I'm going to give you the real pitch, because here's what the definition, or the, not definition, the summary says for the back. He is helping a young and feisty girl in need. Who wouldn't read that?
Yeah, you're really selling me on it, Kate.
It was not well pitched.
Yeah. I guess there's the Poe Dameron book that's also coming out right now. That was the Road to Star Wars, The Force Awakens book that came out that pretty much sums up, 30 years of canon in 5 issues or something like that. That was Greg Rucka who was on that book. I didn't read it. I'm just going off of my memory of everything that was coming out. If you guys have read some of the older stuff, it sounds like, Kate, you've maybe read some of the books, and Nick, I know you've read some of the comics and maybe some of the books. I think a lot of the books, I'm just in like assuming, books and comics. Have you guys seen things that have been pulled in from the old Star Wars canon into this new one, and has it been like adapted well?
Yeah, you're seeing some elements. I think what's really interesting, even though it's a real slow burn, is that, Star Wars Legends canon, I believe is it's called. Legends or Legacy. I think it's Legends. Whatever. Anyway, the old Star Wars canon, let's just refer to it as that. It felt like for a long time, like a year or two, that they were trying to make a very clean break from that canon. And so a lot of fans were like, well, you know, we really liked this character, or we really liked this ship, or we really thought this planet was cool. And it felt like for a while Marvel and Star Wars was like, look, like, we're not going to enter into this slippery slope that is like slowly letting some of that come back in, because it's like, where do we draw the line? That's just my interpretation of it. And that being said, we have started to very slowly see certain parts of old canon get roped back in. For example, there was an Imperial Admiral named Grand Admiral Thrawn, who was an interesting...
I know about him. I know about that one. That's the only one I know about.
Okay. And he is now in Rebels, which I don't watch, but I know he's part of that. And he was a character that was made famous by the 1993... trilogy of books, Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn.
Oh yeah,
and he was a well received character and kind of a unique one, because as a lot of people know, one of the big bullet points of joining the Empire is a very anti alien mentality, a certain real prejudice towards aliens, non humans, and he was a unique character because he was actually a non-human who had, elevated all the way to the role of Grand Admiral. And long story short, he was a very, very well-received character from the old universe that has found his way into the new universe, and I don't know how much more we're going to see of that. I know there have been other little things here and there that have been incorporated, but it's kind of exciting to see that maybe Star Wars is willing to compromise on some level. I mean, don't get me wrong, not everything in the old universe was great, and we don't need all of it back, but it's nice to see some level of compromise starting to happen.
I will say I have not read any of the old comics. The only experience I have with the old canon, outside of the movies, obviously, are the... What were they? The Young Jedi Knights.
Young Jedi Knights. They were the best.
Sure. And so we will never get Jason and Jaina Solo books, because now they're explicitly not canon anymore. And that's the only thing I'd want back. So I don't know. I was a big Jaina fan.
Yeah, there was the Solo twins. One of them was bad, and there one of them was Sith, and one of them was Jedi.
Yeah, eventually. And,
I mean, I only know this just from like little like hearing things from friends, but there was also Mara Jade. She was a character that was like
Luke's wife. Yeah,
Luke ended up being Luke's wife, and
Emperor's
she was
hand.
Yeah, so she and like I don't, but I feel like at this point they've established that none of that's really going to happen, at least from what we've seen of The Last Jedi. So I mean, they're stamping out, I think, entire storylines and entire like chunks of books. I know there was like a Rogue Squadron series, or maybe I'm just thinking of the video
games. Oh, X-Wing books,
comics and novels. Yeah.
Okay. So, but we haven't seen if any of that is there, because there is this 30-year gap that we haven't talked about.
You're not reading the books. You just got to read the books, man. That's what all of the books they're putting out are about. Yeah.
Oh, they are putting books out. They are currently putting books out. Okay.
So not this comics. I didn't know. The novels. Most of the novels right now.
Well, Shattered Empire does bridge it.
Yeah. Oh, that's true too. But like the they've just churned out a whole bunch of novels about the time between 6 and 7.
Okay. See, that's the kind of stuff that I would want to say I would love to read, but I can barely read the books that I want to read, like
well,
prose
listen,
books.
Listen,
because
they're
read.
All enhanced audio, which makes them like 10 times better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
don't you want to hear Darth Vader breathing down your neck as you try to sleep?
No, they do. Nick, they do even like atmospheric stuff. So like when they're in cantina, you just hear like the background ambient noise of a cantina or like wherever location.
Have they done
they
enhanced
are.
Audio for like Alien? Like has someone read the novelization by Alan Dean Foster at Alien?
I don't know. You let me know how that is.
Right before I go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess. So Kate, you said you haven't read any of the older books.
I've never read none of the old comics.
The old comics. Nick, have you read a lot of the old comics, or is it still just like a... I know you've talked a couple times about the old Howard Chaykin book and just the insane shit that they did because no one knew what was going on. Have you read anything else out there that's like...
I know because
for a little while there was a really cool Darth Maul series. I remember there was a Darth Vader series that got really popular right before the Dark Horse contract ended. Have you read any of that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So when I was younger and the library and I weren't at odds, I pretty much read every single Star Wars novel
before your blood feud.
Before the war of, you know, exactly
57 cents.
Yeah, $30. I'm not paying it.
We're gonna use some of the Kickstarter funds to get Nick back to the library.
Exactly. We're getting me a library card again.
There's a follow up to this though. The people need to know that now Nick's dad also has a feud. It's the whole family. Pretty soon.
Oh yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. My dad is. You know, when the automated voice calls and says like he owes like 50 cents, like he gets all mad and like on principle he's like I'm not paying it. He's like, these people won't leave me alone. So the whole white, it's a real Hatfields and McCoys thing over here. It's turning into a you know, it's a multi-generational, you know. You know, when I raise, you know, when I inevitably raise, you know, my kids, it's going to be like, you know,
we don't
we're not
talk
going
to those
there. That's
people.
The bad place. Yeah. Look, son, you have a choice. You can go there, or you can be an American. So it's real simple.
You can go there or you can be a part of this family. You have to pick.
Yeah. Yeah. When I grew up, we had to go there, son, because that's where we rented movies. And now we have a choice and it's called Netflix. And now that they own all of America, we don't have a choice anyway. So, So Nick White's future being crafted.
So I read all of the library. You read a lot of stuff. Okay.
Read like pretty much all of the books. And, you know, that was an interesting position for my parents because, like, you know, understandably both of them being educators, but not like snooty highfalutin people. They were like, you know, we would like if maybe you were reading some classics, but, you know, I was just tearing through all of these basically like sci-fi pulp paperback, you know, Rogue Squadron books, and they're like, you know what, that's fine. Like, you're not outside, you know, like rough housing with kids or just generally getting, you know, fresh air, so, you know, whatever. So I like read all of those. I read some of the video. I played some of the video games. I've recently been reading some of the comics, but at the time, you know, when you're 6 or 7, you know, a $3 or $4 book is something that's tough to come by. And we've talked about in the past how, you know, just depending upon where you live in the mid 90s, getting your hands on a comic book was nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I remember the one my dad got me. I can't remember. It's like the only one that was written, and they were so proud of this, by Anthony Daniels, the guy who played C-3PO, and he co-wrote this adventure of C-3PO and R2-D2, which is kind of exciting until I found out in subsequent years that apparently he's a grade-A asshole. He's terrible. Like, him and R2-D2's actor, Kenny Baker, had a fucking blood feud. They hated each other, and he would not stop spreading shit about Kenny Baker all the time. So
what?
It's true.
This is true.
Look it up. They hate each other so much. But yeah, the old comics were interesting. If anyone, I realize that a lot of people are like, they're not canon anymore. What value do they have? And there is sort of a stereotype.
Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But there's also a stereotype that Dark Horse was kind of like...
edgy.
Well, here's the point, right?
Yeah.
So, well, that they got lazy, you know, that they were handed this property and they didn't really... really do anything that exciting with it, which is just not true. They were able to pretty much do whatever they wanted because, you know, 94, 95, 96, you know, we're talking about years when the Star Wars property is effectively doing nothing except releasing these special, you know, George Lucas, I put three extra X-Wings in this scene. Come watch my movie in theaters. It's in THX sound now. It's so much better. And you can see that one Jawa hiding in the cave. His eyes are, you know, have a higher luminescence. It's way better. Come see my movie. That was the trailer for episode four, Remastered. You know, Dark Horse was doing a lot of crazy, interesting things. They went way back in time and did the whole Knights of the Old Republic, you know, several thousand years before. And one of my favorite books that I would definitely recommend to people is a series called Star Wars Legacy, which takes place, I think, hundreds, if not thousands of years after the stuff that we know so very well. And it involves Cade Skywalker, who is the last surviving heir to the Skywalker name, and the adventures he has in an era that's very, very Sith populated. And I like that series a lot. I thought that was a really good reinvention. And that's written by Jan Duresma and John Ostrander, and I can't say enough positive things about that.
I remember when that was coming out, covers for that.
That's one that I can't recommend enough. The original comic that came out as well, with Howard Chaykin drawing it, and I think Archie Goodwin, the famous Batman editor, he at least was writing it at one point. And yeah, as I've said many times before, that book is just great because here they are trying to craft the future of Star Wars, not quite knowing where the next movie is going to go. And there are some obvious missteps that don't quite end up quite in line with canon and how things play out. But, you know, those are really good. The Brian Wood run, which was also just simply called Star Wars, which was almost immediately before the license got handed back, I think at 2014.
Yeah.
Wood's run was really good. It suffered from some real bad swap-out art after the first arc, but...
I mean, I will try to defend Ryan Kelly here, who was the swap-out artist.
Was he?
I believe so.
Maybe
I believe
he was the first. Or was I thought he the first one was okay, but it got... worse.
Yeah, I do remember reading that book, and I think getting to around issue 8 or 9 and thinking, oh, I don't know. Like, yeah. Which was a bummer because I really wanted to try to read a Star Wars book at that time because I was trying to branch out into actual properties despite my hatred of property licensed books. I wanted to try Star Wars book because I'd only heard good things about it. And then, you know, it kind of got weird and the story became really slow and strange. And then everything just dropped off, so I never kept up with it. But I guess, like, I think there were some books that were running at the final moments that were, I think, really popular, which is why the handover felt like such a sudden slap in the face to fans, because it was like Star Wars books were starting to get really good again. Not to say they weren't always good, but I know that there was a slump for a while where they just kept releasing new books over and over to see what would work. And then they finally got like 3 or 4 books running side by side that weren't all involved, but they were all really good.
Matt Kent was telling a Han Solo story right towards the end. I forget the name of it, but Matt Kent was writing a Han Solo tale that was really good. And it was almost like, it was probably almost like Dark Horse was told, like, the clock's ticking. You've got like a half year to do, you know, to try to, you know, put a dot all your I's and cross your T's on this property. And then we're going to take it back and make some fat money off this thing. So but there's still interesting stuff there to be found. I think one of the things that is kind of interesting about the modern Marvel Star Wars books, and I've complained about this at least a million times to everyone on this show before, and I don't know if it's been literally on this show before, but
sure,
you know, there's something slightly constraining about what can be done with the modern Star Wars books, you know, because they've you've got to make sure this story lines up between this movie and this movie, and you can't kill off this character because they've got to show up in episode 8, and you can't sometimes, if you're a real spoil sport, you start thinking about things too much, you can just go down the checklist and be like, I know 7 of the 8 protagonists in this book, like, are, you know, from a chronological standpoint, are incapable of actually dying by the time you know, yeah, the next one comes out, which, you know, just don't think about that stuff too much. Just don't.
I think that's one of the reasons Dr. Aphra is so fun and so popular, besides being a fantastic right. character, is that you're totally right when you're talking about the, like, the main characters that are in all the movies and everything. So that having her as, like, the spinoff character from Darth Vader, where Kieran Gillen created her, and, like, obviously there's, like, we've talked about this off the show, but, like, obviously she's either going to die or become not a big deal in the galaxy where she wouldn't appear in the movies. Mm-hmm. But still, that's so ambiguous, and you have so much time to deal with them, because all her stories are, like, day-to-day, right? So, like, you could tell, you know, 1,000 issues of a comic and still not reach the next movie, and the next movie right. tells you nothing about what happened to her. So I think that's one of the reasons it's so fun. Plus murder droids. Murder droids are the best.
Plus murder droids, yeah. See, I was going to say, I think that there is a lot of room for that stuff. I don't know what Kieran Gillen did, but he struck fucking gold with Dr. Aphra.
That's so good.
And it was really surprising hearing about all of this. And I did go back and I did read the first volume of Darth Vader, and I was like, holy shit, this character is cool. And the fact that she kept going on and she had all these characters and they made little Funko Pops about her character, like, it's insane.
She's in a lot of video games now, too.
And she's showing up, and it's unbelievable to think that that is a potential thing that a comic book creator could do. Like, we won't know unless we, you know, sat down with Kieran Gillen and picked his brain off the record and then revealed it on, like, a bunch of jerks. But, like, was this something that Marvel inserted? Was this something that he created? I know that he's talked about it on his blog or whatever, but still, it's interesting to see that potential is there, that a great creator could come in a book or in a TV show or in a comic and do what people have been doing at Dark Horse for the last 20 plus years, creating all these characters, and then have them play out in these huge things, to say, like, I created this thing and now it is, you know, it is an action figure that you can go buy. And I don't think we've seen that a lot in, like, a big licensed property like this. Like, we see it in Marvel and DC or whatever. Those are, like, that's like comic book characters in, like, a whole other realm. But, like, to see Star Wars taking that and running with it means that you could potentially have a character that is running around at a Disneyland theme park. Like, that's wild to me. And it also helps that Dr. Aphra is fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, she's also an amazing character that you want to read
amazing.
More about.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I, in a lot of ways, like, optimistically, I feel like, fingers crossed that you know, I realize we're, what, maybe 2.5, nearly 3 years into Marvel running these Star Wars books, and I feel like maybe in some way, hopefully, this is Marvel kind of putting on the training wheels right now and trying to bring as many people as they can on board with recognizable characters and recognizable eras and recognizable planets and ships, et cetera, et cetera. And that hopefully, maybe, we'll start to slowly gravitate more and more towards people that aren't related to the fucking Skywalkers and that, you know, haven't owned the Millennium Falcon at some point. And Dr. Aphra is proof of that. And also, Kieran Gillen's annual number one, where he talks about this rebellion super spy, and I think his name is Eneb Ray. I don't know if you've read this one, Mike, but, like,
I haven't.
It's this super spy, and he's put on this mission, and he ends up nearly killing the Emperor, except he, like, shocks him, and I don't want to reveal too much because he ends up playing a huge part in the ongoing, which I thought was really cool. I mean, so many annual issues are so underutilized or just throwaway shit. And he ends up getting roped back into Star Wars Volume 3 Rebel Jail in a very, very interesting way. I don't want to get into it too much, but my point being is that sort of these more original characters that, like I said, aren't directly related to characters we're familiar with or are on missions or involved in things that we really don't know that much about, maybe we're slowly gravitating that way. I realize it's probably slower than some people want, but I think we're slowly starting to reach a point, for better or for worse, where we're not having to rely on some of these crutches to, you know, bring readers along with us. So
right.
Yeah, there's an entire galaxy of planets. There's so much out there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
the kind of thing. You can go do anything you want in that universe.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is to see the Star Wars franchise play with that in the movies, like getting a Rogue One movie.
Right.
Is really interesting because nobody was
backstory,
really in that.
The film.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, I mean, sure, there was some ties in some general concepts that, like, obviously tie back to the greater Star Wars storyline, but all of the main characters were just like other Star Wars people, you know? And that to me shows that Disney is at least willing to try to do that, even if it's slow going. They're willing to try, and maybe we'll see more of that in the Lando movie too.
I mean, the Han Solo movie,
or sorry, Han Solo.
My sister and brother-in-law are big into Star Wars, and when that came out, and they were like trying to figure out when it's set and stuff, they're like, "Wait, so it's just like telling how they got the plans, and then nothing like connect? Like after they watch it, nothing like blah blah blah." I'm like, "Let me tell you about backstory arcs."
I mean, Rogue One was a backstory, but like. I loved it. I thought it was a really cool movie. Like, you knew the end, but at the same time, you felt for these characters.
Well, you knew the end, but you also didn't quite know the end.
Right. You didn't know the characters' end. You knew the end for the plans. Yeah.
And, I mean, if you read some articles about how Disney went back and forth and back and forth on how to end that movie, it's fascinating. Because they had a world of a time trying to decide how they were going to end that movie, as you might imagine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
they tried some more crowd pleasing stuff.
Oh, I think they picked well then.
Where they did. Oh, yeah, I think so. I still think it was gutsy. I still think there were probably some people, especially people who like had to explain to their kids like the notion of human sacrifice. I'm not ready for this discussion.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's wrap up real quick then. If you guys had to pick any of the Star Wars books that are out there, like a single volume to recommend to someone, what would you recommend?
I think it's real easy to say Star Wars, Volume 1, Jason Aaron, John Cassaday. But for me personally, I'm going to go a little bit offbeat and say the Lando standalone miniseries. You have fantastic writing from Charles Soule. You have glorious, glorious art by Alex Maleev. Just it's a great pairing, just fantastic art. And it's really, you know, dealing with a character that, especially because the Legends canon is now evaporated, so to speak, we have this character that effectively really has no backstory now.
Right.
It's a great story. It's got sort of a Ocean's 11 kind of like, we're going to do a big heist, scenario going on, which, you know, puts it into a sort of a different subgenre that I really enjoy. You know, it's a bunch of mercenaries. We don't have anyone with crazy force powers or anything like that. We have just people trying to run a scam on the Empire. And I think that that's, it's really interesting. And it's, and of course it's standalone. And it might not be as approachable as just literally Star Wars. But I think there's a lot of enjoyment to be, you know, derived from it.
Cool. Kate, what about you?
Yeah, I'd say it depends on the person. With any media tie-in stuff, I think the best bet is always to start with the character you're most interested in. And so if you're most interested in Lando, then yeah, by all means. Otherwise, just quality-wise and accessibility, I'd say start with Vader. That's the Darth Vader number one volume by Kieran Gillen. And that gets you knowing who Dr. Aphra is. And then just read every Dr. Aphra book ever because they're amazing.
Gotcha. Well, for me, for the few Star Wars books that I have read, I would definitely say the Han Solo book with Marjorie Liu and Max Brooks, I believe. This is a super cool book about Han Solo doing a small job for Princess Leia. There's a mystery afoot. He's in the middle of a race. It's Han Solo at his most Han Solo. It is peak Han Solo, more than I've ever seen or read in anything.
Oh, I would say of all the people dialogue-wise that writers struggle to write dialogue for, Han Solo is so hit and miss for if people can capture his like witty banter kind of thing, because he speaks in a very specific way, not just like general witty, but like, I don't even know how to describe it.
The deadpanning as well.
Yeah, it's certain writers hit it and a lot don't.
I completely agree with you there, and I think the combination of Mark Brooks's art and Marjorie Liu's writing, like, it's perfect. Like, he gets the facial expressions right. She gets the dialogue done so well.
Nice.
I was so very impressed. I think there's a moment in issue 2 or issue 3 where there's a scene, and I'm just like, that is the most Han Solo thing I've ever read, more than I've seen in the movies. It's so good. So I would recommend that Han Solo miniseries. It's fantastic. Like, it was the most fun I've had reading a licensed book in a very long time. I can safely say that.
Wow.
And that's coming from me, Mr. I hate licensed products. Or licensed products. So, anyways, so let's wrap up the show here. Nick, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Death Star Plans on Twitter. That's pretty much it. That's how I like it.
Sometimes you show up on the Goodreads group. Kate, what about you?
Yeah, true.
I'm on Goodreads. I'm also on Twitter at Kate Scotchless.
Cool. I guess I didn't tell anyone what to do for this week's show, but yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Mike Rappin, as well as on Medium sometimes. You can also follow the show at IRCB Podcast, where we retweet stuff at 3 a.m. like I did last night. And you can also check out our weekly poll that we do on Fridays, where I ask absurd questions and people give me the best answers and responses. You can also check out our Goodreads group that Kate mentioned. That's if you just go to Goodreads and search I Read Comic Books with the first group. We're almost 300 people strong, which is awesome. We've got a lot of people commenting on our threads where we talk about our monthly show as well as discussions on comics, and just we have a general miscellaneous comics slash stuff place now, so you can just come and hang out, which is nice. You can also check out our website, ircbpodcast.com, where you can follow up on all of our episodes. You can check out some information about our Kickstarter. You'll see our Kickstarter page, which is going to have all the people who contributed to the Kickstarter, their name on there. And you can also check out our comic book creator industry pronunciation guide that is ever-growing, with full of names of the people that create the things that you love. You can also rate the show on iTunes, Stitcher, all that stuff. I honestly cannot encourage people enough to go do this, because it really helps us look legit, and it also boosts our ranking so more people can find us, and it means a lot to us. And I think if people start commenting reviews, maybe we'll just start reading them on the show. That would be something we could start doing, like every other show out there on the internet. You can also email us at ircb@destroythecybe.org, and I'll say hello back to you. Infinity Shred does all the music for us. They're the absolute best. I love them a lot, and they're super awesome guys. Xander is the coolest dude. He also edits the show. So finally, I guess from everyone here, going through all the credits. I'm sorry, guys. I realized I didn't give anyone anything to do this week. So thank you for listening to the show. Any final thoughts from Nick and Kate?
I think that pretty much sums it up. Get in there and start reading those Star Wars books. And for those of you who think they're maybe a little too expensive, just wait around, because I guarantee this is coming from someone who doesn't work at Comixology, so it's not like some inside scoop, people. This is Nick White just making a prediction. Let's just be clear here. There's no insider information here. I guarantee there's going to be a really big Star Wars sale when this new movie comes out. So those who are sort of waiting to dip their... like before. So those waiting to dip their toes, I think that's probably going to be the right time to do it.
I wouldn't even go on Comixology. They're actually cheaper on the Amazon Kindle sales. When those happen, all of these books drop to like $2 a piece for volumes.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, do that. Read some Star Wars books. So, and until next time, we will check you later.